Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Today is the 1st of February, 2015, and today we are honored to be joined on the line by Roger Veer, a guest who I hope will be familiar to my own listeners and viewers, if for no other reason than, of course, that he was one of the interviewees in my feature-length documentary on the Federal Reserve, Century of Enslavement, of course, available for free on YouTube and on my own website. And also in an interesting eye-opener report that we did, Bitcoin, Anarchy, and Freedom, back last year, which both of those will be linked up in the show notes for anyone who needs those links. But of course, Roger Veer is, I guess, long story short, he's described as a Bitcoin entrepreneur and a voluntarist. He's a self-styled voluntarist, and we've talked about those issues in our previous conversation. He is available at rogerveer.com, so once again, that will be linked up in the show notes as well. Roger, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you, as always, James.
Well, while I correct and collect my voice, we're going to be talking today about a very interesting experience that you had. I'll just reference a Coindesk.com article on this experience. Roger Veer denied U.S. visa to attend Miami Bitcoin Conference, which might be surprising considering, of course, the U.S. is your motherland and your place of birth. So it is a bit strange that you would be denied even a visa to visit this country. But even stranger, as you point out in a tweet that you made on January 6th, while forcing me to pay taxes, the U.S. Embassy at Barbados tyrants won't allow me to attend CES 2015, TNABC, or anything in the U.S. This is a strange state of affairs. So before, I guess, we get into the specifics of why and how you're being denied a visa at this particular time to enter the place of your birth, perhaps you could tell us about your own situation, how you came to leave the United States and why you chose to renounce your U.S. citizenship in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, there were quite a few factors that all kind of came together. The main influencing factor that made me know I wanted to leave the U.S. was I feel I was politically persecuted in the U.S. after running for California State Assembly as a libertarian. I wound up doing 10 months in federal prison, and after being treated so incredibly unfairly, I knew I didn't ever want to live in the U.S. ever again. Around that time, I had one Japanese girlfriend and figured that there were more to be had in Japan. So I wound up moving to Japan, and I'm happily married now, but I've been living in Japan for almost 10 years now.
So I understand that you are traveling on a St. Kitts passport these days, and this is part of the problem why you are not even able to get a visa to enter your own place of birth?
No, to be honest, I think the problem is that the U.S. Embassy doesn't follow their own rules, and they have a bunch of juvenile, petty people working there, to tell you what I really think. According to the statutes and the way the rules are written, I very clearly qualify for a visa. The people at the U.S. Embassy in Barbados, when I applied for a visa, I applied for what's called a B1, B2 visa, which is basically just means a tourist or business meeting visa. In order to qualify for that, you have to prove that you have ties to a country outside of the U.S. that will motivate you to leave the U.S. at the end of your visit. I spent a huge amount of money and a huge amount of time and effort to get citizenship somewhere else. I haven't been living in the U.S. for more than a decade. I have, you know, a home and family and a business all outside of the U.S. and brought proof of all of that to my meeting in the embassy. The embassy workers denied my visa application to visit the U.S., claiming that I hadn't proved ties outside of the U.S. while refusing to even allow me to slide my proof of ties outside of the U.S. through the window for them to review. So they physically refused to even look at my evidence and then claimed that I hadn't provided any evidence, which just is incredibly juvenile. And I guess I was a little bit naive to expect the U.S. government to actually follow their own rules. But it was just shocking that just how petty they were being at the embassy while physically refusing to even look at my proof and then claiming that I hadn't provided any proof. It's just, it felt like it was something out of the Twilight Zone.
That is insane and outrageous and Kafkaesque, all rolled up into one ball of putrid venom. That's disgusting, really. And are you being targeted specifically, do you think, or is this just the embassy at Barbados generally?
It's hard to know. I'm going to apply for a visa again at the U.S. Embassy in Japan, and in March I'll have an appointment there. And hopefully they'll be a bit more responsible and Japanese in general are kind of known for following guidelines and following the rules. We'll see if that rubs off on the U.S. workers at the embassy in Japan or not. But if the U.S. embassy in Japan does issue the visa and follows their own rules, that'll just reflect that much more poorly on the workers at the U.S. embassy in Barbados. And I think they should be absolutely ashamed for physically even refusing to look at the paperwork and then claiming that I hadn't provided any of the proof that I was required to provide, which is just insanity. So that's what motivated me to go to the media and complain about it, because, you know, anybody that's paying attention should be appalled that the U.S. embassy workers would think it would be okay to act in such a way.
It really is appalling, and I'm glad that this has been picked up by numerous outlets online, because this is the type of thing that, I mean, in so many ways goes to prove the point of why you moved out of the U.S. in the first place and why you're a voluntarist who wears t-shirts saying that borders are imaginary lines, and you were nice enough to provide me with one when we met in person in Tokyo last year. So this just goes to underscore and highlight everything that you've been saying about this the whole time. But something that I don't quite understand with regard to this, you are apparently still paying taxes in the United States. I thought you renounced your U.S. citizenship.
Yeah, so the way it works is when you renounce your U.S. citizenship, there's a one-time final exit tax of based on capital gains tax rates of your entire net worth, which will be coming due this April 15th, which I'm still calculating, and I'll still have to pay that. And because Bitcoins have really appreciated quite a bit, I'll be owing a substantial sum when that comes along. But you're also, even if you're not living in the U.S., if you have any income that's derived from U.S. sources, you still owe tax on all of that. And I still own a business in California that's still, because it's earning income, I'm still paying a huge amount of tax to the U.S. And it just seems doubly insane that, I have this business there providing lots of jobs to people in California, paying lots of taxes, and they won't even physically let me change airplanes at a U.S. airport. While traversing, from one side of the world to another, I'm not even allowed to change airplanes in the U.S. while paying, all these taxes to the U.S. government. So it just really, they're showing their true colors, that they're just basically a criminal gang, and they say, pay us money or we'll hurt you. And if you don't, we'll lock you in a cage. And it's, and they don't care what their own rules are. They just do whatever's convenient for them, and they should be embarrassed for it. And I think we're seeing more and more people around the world that are starting to realize that, and that the police aren't here to protect us. The police are here to protect themselves and the politicians, and they don't serve the public. They're just to maintain their own power.
Well, I think you're right that there are more and more people recognizing this, if for no other fact than we are no longer living in the 19th century, when these types of arcane types of rules and regulations may have, if not been made any ethical sense, would have made at least practical sense in terms of enforcement. But we're here in the 21st century, where there are a lot of people in your boat and my boat living away from their country of birth and going through these types of issues. And this is something that a lot of people are butting their heads against. I mean, I think we both know, and I hope the listeners know, what the what our ethical position on this subject is. But perhaps you can tell us, just from your sense of this experience, what is the ultimate point of these lines on the map, and where do you think we are in the process of actually deconstructing or getting rid of these lines?
It's going to take some time. And here we are in the year 2015, and I think most people in most places of the world realizes that that racism is nonsensical and doesn't make sense and isn't a proper viewpoint to have or hold. But most people still seem to believe in nationalism and that my country is better than that other country over there. But if you really stop and think about it, racism and nationalism are just two sides of the same coin. And I think it'll take a little bit more time for people to realize that nationalism is insanity as well, and people shouldn't believe in such stupid things that if you happen to be born in one country, you're better than people that are born in another country, and that's just madness. But there's a lot of people in the world that still believe in that sort of thing, and I think it'll take them some time to realize just how silly that is. But the world will be a much, much better place with less racism and less nationalism.
You mean like when we were treated to those crowds that quote-unquote spontaneously gathered outside the White House when they quote-unquote killed Osama bin Laden, chanting USA, USA? Yeah, those are, yeah. pretty despicable scenes for, as you say, for 2015. You'd think that we as a human race would have moved past that point, but apparently not yet. Well, these are the types of issues, obviously, that that yourself and myself are concerned with, and something that you deal with in a very practical sense with your work as a Bitcoin evangelist and entrepreneur. Tell us a little bit about what the work that you do with Bitcoin and where it takes you around the globe.
Yeah, when I discovered Bitcoin, I saw it as this tool that can move the entire world in a better direction in which each individual will have complete control over their own finances, regardless of what laws politicians pass or what sort of banks want to do. And so it just, I was the first person in the world to start investing in Bitcoins directly in a big way and Bitcoin startups. And you know, now here I am 4 years later, and I'm still telling people all over the world all about Bitcoin and all the positive ways it's going to bring additional human freedom to people on every planet, regardless of where they happen to have been born or what color their skin is or what color their passport is. And it's really starting to happen. I just recently, the New York Stock Exchange invested in a Bitcoin business, and I think it might kind of wind up being like the movie Aliens, where like maybe the banks and governments don't realize just how disruptive Bitcoin is going to be. And in the movie Alien, you know, the aliens implant the alien larva inside the human, and then eventually it grows and grows and grows and then pops out and takes over everything. I think Bitcoin may do the same sort of thing with the financial systems, where it'll grow and grow from the inside, and then eventually it'll just pop out, and Bitcoin will be the default financial platform for everything.
That is the most interesting Bitcoin analogy I've ever heard, and one of the most vivid, although I'm not sure that's necessarily the way that we want to frame it for the purposes of telling people about Bitcoin. But yes, I certainly see what you're saying, and I hope that you are correct, because of course, as we've talked about before, Bitcoin is a way of taking out the middleman in economic transactions, and of course, in our fiat currency environment, that middleman is the central bank. Whether we know that central bank is involved in our transactions or not, they are. And of course, they set the price of money every single day. Well, not if they don't control those transactions, not if they don't have any access to them. And that's obviously the hope and promise of Bitcoin and what it allows people to do. These are the types of issues that, as you say, you are globetrotting at the moment, telling people about in conferences all over the place. I follow your Twitter feed, and I am always interested to see what country you're in next. It seems like you're always somewhere else. But speaking of being somewhere else, you're going to be in Mexico next month, or actually at the end of this month, with me. Oh my God, how time flies. Tell us about your trip to Anarcopoco this year and what you're going to be talking about.
Yeah, people from all over the world are gathering in Acapulco, Mexico for Anarcopoco, which is going to be a conference of volunteers, Bitcoiners, and anarchists, and people that generally support monetary and personal freedom are gathering from all over the world. And I think it's going to be a wonderful, exciting time. It'll be my first time to visit the city. But Jeff Berwick's organizing the whole thing there, also known as the Dollar Vigilante. So I think there's going to be all sorts of interesting discussions and planning and talks that are going to go on there. And anybody who's interested is more than welcome to attend. And I can't think of a better place to have a conference in the middle of winter than in warm, sunny Acapulco, Mexico.
I couldn't agree with you more, and that's why I'm looking forward to it very much myself. Of course, I'll be giving a speech during the conference as well, but you'll be giving a keynote address on Bitcoin itself. So again, the dates and the details for all of that are up on the Anarcopoco website, anarcopoco.com. Again, that will be linked up in the show notes as well for this interview. So Roger, I'm looking forward to meeting you again, this time not in our own backyard here in Japan, but halfway around the world. And it'll be both of our first time there in Acapulco, and I'm sure it will be a much sunnier and warmer meeting than our last one. So I'm very much looking forward to that. I hope everyone will be able to join us, and if you are, please do come by and say hello, and we'll definitely be looking for people out there who are interested in these types of ideas, so I'm looking forward to spreading that. Roger Veer, I want to thank you very much for taking the time again to talk with us today, and if there are any websites you'd like to promote, I did talk about rogerveer.com, but I know you have about a million different ventures, so if there's anything you'd like to tell people about, please do so.
Actually, for those of you that have friends and family that don't care about monetary policy or economics or moral philosophy or any of that sort of stuff, there's an awesome new tool to get them involved in Bitcoin anyhow. And that's a website called purse.io, like a woman's purse, P-U-R-S-E. And that allows anybody to get a 20 or 25% discount on whatever they want from Amazon.com just by paying for it in Bitcoin. And I think that's a wonderful, wonderful tool to get new people involved in Bitcoin, regardless of what their politics or world, you know, worldview or philosophy is. So that's purse.io. You can get to 20 or 25% discount very easily on anything you want from Amazon.com just by paying in Bitcoins.
You know, actually, I booked a hotel as part of my trip via Expedia with Bitcoin that has been donated to me over the years. So it is starting to make its way into the economy in very useful ways. So I hope people check out purse.io as you suggest. Roger Veer, I think that'll do it for today. Thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, James.